Woodrow Kroll here. When you train one pastor in Ecuador, some donor friends are standing by to train a second pastor.
Call 833-443-5467 or go online at trainapastor.com.
Every gift counts, and now every gift is doubled. Trainapastor.com.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the show for you as a family caregiver. Hope for the caregiver, that conviction that we as caregivers can live a calmer, healthier, and dare I say it, a more joyful life. And we're glad you're with us. As always, I'm joined by himself, the Baron of the Board, the Sultan of the Sound, the Earl of Engineering, the man who is just a delight to millions, John Butler, the Count of Mighty Disco.
Everyone. John Butler, the Count of Mighty Disco.
He's tall.
Man, I tell people I'm not, but like 5'17". I don't know what the big deal is. You know?
John, I got a book in the mail this week, and I've been consumed with it. It is. I get a lot of books. I get a lot of books that people want me to read, and come on the show and so forth. But
hardcover, paperback, or digital?
This is hardcover, which I like best. And it's Richard Louie. He is, a lot of people are going to know who he is. He's an anchor over MSNBC and NBC. He's been in journalism for 30 years. And while I get a lot of books because of the nature of what we do for caregivers, this one just stood out. And it's called Enough About Me, which is something I've never said. But it's the unexpected power of selflessness. And so I wanted to introduce Richard. Thank you for being a part of the show today, Richard. Welcome to the show, and we're glad to have you with us.
Peter, thanks for having me, and good chatting with you.
This has been a real delight for me to read this. Richard's father, John, is like mine, a Presbyterian minister. We're both Presbyterian minister's kids. But as I read this book, Richard, first off, the way you write is spectacular. Let me explain. You write as a journalist that is connecting dots, seeing drama and stories that other people may miss, and then taking the time to just kind of unpack on why is this important? It just flows. It is such a good book, and I can't recommend this enough. But it's all framed in a very difficult event that happened with you and your father. Just jump into that and just unfold that for us on how this came about.
Yeah, it was one of those things, and I know that a lot of your conversations are around this space. And for me, the book, which is Enough About Me, The Unexpected Power of Selflessness, was really, I think, 7 or 8 years in the making when my father was diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
We lost Richard, but we'll get him back here in a minute. And I will fill in the gaps there. Richard's father was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and Richard thought he was going to have to quit work, stop being a journalist. And he went to his boss to have that conversation, and he said, look, I got to take a step back. And then his boss said, hey, guess what? I'm dealing with the same thing with my family, and I understand it. We've got a different plan here. So did we get him back, Ed? I think we got him back.
Hey, Peter, all right, Richard, I don't know what happened there.
That's okay. We filled in the gaps because I told him that you went to your boss and said, hey, look, I got to step back because of this unexpected event with my father. And your boss's response was not what you expected.
No, sir. I thought she was going to say to me, we like you a lot, Richard. We're good friends, but square peg, round hole. You know, you have an 8-day-a-week job. So let's figure out how we can do this maybe in another time in our lives. But instead, Yvette Miley's her name. She said, guess what? I am a long-distance caregiver, too. And I want to figure out how we can make this work for you. So we came up with 4 solutions. And now 6 years in, I've been flying from New York to San Francisco maybe 2 or 3 times, except during COVID, 2 or 3 times a month to help with my mom caring for my father. And now caring for my mother. So it was really a surprising thing that happened. The beginning of trying to understand, I guess, the big idea behind the book.
Well, and it is. And one of the things I like about where you go with this, and you start introducing this concept to people. There's some people that think, okay, in order for me to be selfless, I've got to be like Mother Teresa. I've got to be this way, but I'm not. And if I'm not like Mother Teresa, then I'm going to be this way. And you refer to it as just being binary. It's either this or that. And you say, no, there's, I love what you said. There are a lot more recipes or a lot more meals in this particular potluck or what, how did you phrase
that?
That's
right.
That was a great way you phrased it.
That's exactly what I said. There's a lot more than two dishes at this cook-off.
Yeah.
That's and... Oh, nice. Yeah.
I just thought that was great. I said potluck because I'm from the South, so I can't help it. But that is a great way of saying that. There's more flavor here going on than what we think. And so talk about that a little bit.
You know, because growing up, it was for me, my father being a pastor, I saw things as, you know, you were either all the way in or you weren't. And it's also growing up, you know, we all kind of lived through that in our younger years where we think in absolutes. And so when I was thinking of this idea of, you know, what selflessness might be or taking care of other people, I had already reached a stage where I had understood things can't be, we can't be absolutely 100%. So we can't be Mother Teresa. We can't be Desmond Tutu. Just like Desmond Tutu and Mother Teresa probably weren't even those ideals themselves. But what they were is at certain parts in their lives, really amazing. And so the idea is, even though like us talking right now, Peter, John, and myself, I'm being selfish because I'm actually talking about myself an awful lot. And what I came to terms with earlier and in process and trying to understand how to talk about the topic of selflessness is that it's okay if so long as I'm 51% or above in the good side of it, because I'm never going to be perfect. I'm never going to be the 100. But if I'm 51% on the good side, I'm pushing the ball forward. And it makes me make more decisions that are constructive, and I by making more decisions, I'm doing more, and by doing more, I'm building more muscle sets. So my 51s become 53s and then 60s, hopefully, and more frequently do that. And I get muscle tone, which I say in the book, so that when the big thing happens, that potential, you know, Desmond Tutu, Mother Teresa moment, I've got the muscle set to jump, to be able to do better at it.
Well, Michael J. Fox has that is wonderful. Michael J. Fox has a great quote that he said, you know, perfection is God's business, excellence is ours. And and I've always kind of held on to, I thought that is a really good quote. And Salvador Dali said, have no fear of perfection, for you shall never achieve it. and I look at that for fellow caregivers, and this is what, of course, this conversation came to you in a caregiving frame. And so I look at my fellow caregivers, myself, and there's some days that we are extraordinarily selfless. Yes. And then there are other days when we're struggling, like we're a drowning victim and we got to survive at all costs, no matter who we take down with us, you know, kind of thing, or you know, trying to save ourselves. And that tension is so real for so many of us as caregivers. And you reference this, and I'm going to actually quote this from, this is about your mother. And you said, "When I got to put my glasses on, this getting old really is not for everything it says in the brochure there. When we support others to the detriment of our own well-being, researchers call this behavior unmitigated selflessness. That's what happened to my mom, though she is far from alone in this regard." Yeah, and I would agree with all of that. Talk about that with your mother, if you don't mind.
I call it the scream, because we were trying to support my mother and her caregiving of my father, and I'm in New York, my sister's in L.A., my mother and father in San Francisco. And, you know, when you have these situations of bumps in the night or a fall or a slip or a noise and you're there, you can immediately ascertain what is that, what does it mean? And that's why when I would come to San Francisco to help care for my father, I'd stay overnight on their couch, and I had done so for 5 years. And so that I could know and hear what was happening. And when I couldn't be there, you know, it's the concern that all caregivers have. So what we did is we installed some cloud cameras. And so we would look on the cameras to support in the caregiving. Like I right now watch my mother twice a week, if I can, as she recovers from falling recently herself. And so that's kind of, as you know, in the community, as you've talked about it for so long, is that that's very helpful. But I saw my mom scream at one point at my father, and it wasn't a scream only of frustration. It was a scream of help. It was a scream of pain, and I knew she was calling out for help. And that is when I realized, okay, we got to really get in there, because mom is never going to tell us this, but she is going through it. She doesn't know I'm listening. I let her know later on. In fact, that chapter I carved out and I showed it to her, because the publishers were saying, Richard, we just want to make sure that, you know, we obviously think everything is copacetic between you and your mom, but just for legal reasons, can you show it to your mom, get the A-OK, right? Just for privacy reasons.
The lawyer said, yeah.
That's right. So I told my, I showed it to my mom. She said, that's fine. Now, the reason being, she understands. I said, Mom, I'm trying to tell other people they can give too much. That unmitigated selflessness is a real possibility, especially in the caregiving space. But we can do that in relationships. We can do that with friends. We can do that in helping people at the charities we're involved in. And that's why in that chapter, as you see there, Peter, there's a test, a quiz, that you can score yourself to see if you are on that line. Because there's a point where we gotta take care of ourselves. That doesn't mean you're being selfish in a bad way. You're being selfish in a good way, so you can help the other person. Just like the videos are on the plane that pop down and say, put your oxygen mask on for yourself so you can help somebody else. That's the same idea.
Well, it is, and I refer to that as stewardship, which is a word, you know, both of us being Presbyterian minister sons, we understand that word. But that's a word that is a lot, it's lost on so many in our country, the word stewardship. It's almost an archaic word, but it's a very important word to us as caregivers. And there is a stewardship of this idea that as you open this book up to people. And this is what caught my eye on this, is because you're not writing this as a caregiving book. And so many of the books that are sent to me are about caregiving task. And I am just convinced that the real issue is the caregiver's heart. And how do we settle that down a little bit? And then one of the things that I've also been helped by is learning the vocabulary. I speak fluent caregiver now after 35 years, and I want to help as many people learn to speak that language, because that's how we can actually address these needs. And so I want to pivot just a hair in the few more minutes I have with you to talk about the three lunches. Because I think this principle then takes it from dealing with Alzheimer's or dealing with trauma or disease or whatever, and then goes directly to the soul level. And I wanted you to spend as much time as you need to on this concept that you did.
Yeah, caregiving is what brought me to the well to understand the idea in that well of what it means to think of others, right, and to care for others. And I did not know that. I think my dad's laughing all the way to the bank, if you will. He, as a pastor, he could be sitting there because he can't talk right now, but he could be smiling and laughing, saying, I got you to write that book, Richard. See? he could be doing that. But, you know, being at that well, if you will, showed that I needed to think about how I can think of others better. The people, even the ones that I think I would never, ever hang out with. And the three lunches, and we look at a lot of science behind all of the efforts and statements we make. We did treat it like a self-help book by looking at some of the science before under it. We wanted to prove the anti-self-help book mantra. And one of those things of the studies we looked at was at Stanford, they had done a study of those who did not get along because of racial background. They had prejudice against other people of different backgrounds. And what they did is they looked at hundreds of pairings of people. I don't like you because you are of Asian descent. I don't like you because you are Latino or you are white, whatever the case may be, or you're black, whatever the case may be. And they paired them up, and then they had them meet three times, want you a lunch, a coffee, a discussion, an event, but more than just hello. And before that, they measured the cortisol level, which is the stress hormone. They measured the dopamine and the oxytocin, which are the happiness chemicals in the body. And that along with qualitative measures showed that, you know, they really were showing prejudice against each other. After the three lunches, the three coffees, that measurement went to just above zero, just above. And so we got to think, that chapter that's called Three Lunches is the reality of what we can do once we understand the need to think outside of ourselves, is to stretch a little, push ourselves, be uncomfortable. Being uncomfortable is about being a bit selfless, because as selfish as I'm always comfortable, I'm not going to get outside my comfort zone. And that study out of Stanford shows it pays off. It pays off.
It pays off big time. And I really have appreciated the way you've gone about this. And it all, again, came to you through the packaging of caregiving. I have on my Saturday show, I do a live call-in show, and it's very much caller-driven. And the first thing I ask is every caregiver, how are you feeling?
Yeah.
Because I want them to learn to speak in their own voice, in a place where they feel comfortable,
exactly,
just sharing how they're feeling. And I thought, wow, Richard's taking this into a whole nother level here of building bridges. You know what? Can you hang on through the break?
Yeah, you bet.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here. We're talking with Richard Louie. He is well-known, 30 years in journalism, NBC, MSNBC, anchor, worldwide he's done. And the stuff he's done in his life is just extraordinary, and I hope you go out and take a look at it. His website, richardlouie.com, L-U-I.com. And his book, I've got it right here. It is Enough About Me, The Unexpected Power of Selflessness, wherever books are sold. We're going to talk a little bit more when we come back. This is Peter Rosenberg, and this is Hope for the Caregiver. Don't go away.
Have you ever struggled to trust God when lousy things happen to you? I'm Gracie Rosenberger, and in 1983, I experienced a horrific car accident leading to 80 surgeries and both legs amputated. I questioned why God allowed something so brutal to happen to me, but over time, my questions changed, and I discovered courage to trust God. That understanding, along with an appreciation for quality prosthetic limbs, led me to establish Standing with Hope. For more than a dozen years, we've been working with the government of Ghana and West Africa, equipping and training local workers to build and maintain quality prosthetic limbs for their own people. On a regular basis, we purchase and ship equipment and supplies, and with the help of inmates in a Tennessee prison, we also recycle parts from donated limbs. All of this is to point others to Christ, the source of my hope and strength. Please visit standingwithhope.com to learn more and participate in lifting others up. That's standingwithhope.com. I'm Gracie, and I am Standing with Hope.
He will be strong to deliver me safe. The joy of the Lord is mine.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is the show for caregivers, about caregivers, hosted by a caregiver. And that, by the way, is my wife, Gracie, with Russ Taff off of her CD, Resilient. And you can get a copy of that if you want to go out to hopeforthecaregiver.com. Just follow the prompts there. Whatever you want to do to help push this show forward, we'll send you a copy of her CD. And I think you'll love it tremendously. We're talking with Richard Louie. He is the author of this new book, and it is I cannot recommend this book enough. This is called Enough About Me, The Unexpected Power of Selflessness. And, you know, and I know it seems like it's a little bit of a paradox that he's out here promoting a book about selflessness, but this is one of those messages that come from the soul level, where there was a moment of discovery of the beauty and joy of life in the midst of whatever. And I think sometimes we are so consumed with making sure that everything fits and looks nice and tidy around us, and then we can be okay. And Richard discovered what so many heroes of ours along the way discovered, that there is beauty and joy in the midst of whatever. And some of the most wonderful moments that Gracie and I have ever had as a couple have been in the hospital room. And so I just could not wait to get him. I couldn't wait to get to the show today, and I was so excited, and I was so glad to have him come in. So Richard, when the reader finishes this book, what are your hopes that reader will be able to do and feel and experience and think? What are some of the things that you'd like to see the impact on that reader?
You know, Peter, you so well articulated that joy despite difficulty, that opportunity to to learn something new and really energize you. And you talked about you and Gracie being in places that people might think are always not so uplifting. And, you know, for me, I have a similar example of my father when he could no longer walk or talk or eat. And yet he's now has to use a stomach tube. Is that I wondered whether he was still there. And there I am in his care community. And I took out the amplifier, which is just basically a headphones with a microphone on it. And I said, "Hey, Dad, are you there? And if you are, can you blink once?" And of course, my heart and brain was hoping he would blink, but knew that he hadn't spoken and he had walked and he hadn't eaten through his mouth orally in months. And 2 seconds went by, and then he blinked a long, intentional once. And then I was like, "Oh my, what? What happened? Wait, what is this?" And I said, "Okay, I hate to be that vain selfie guy, but I'm pulling out my phone because I'm asking him again. And I'm going to share this with my siblings and my mom." And then I said again, I said, "Hey, Dad, this is your son, Richard. If you recognize me, blink once." And paused. And he gave me a long blink again. And I got to tell you, Peter, when you can find those moments that you learn, it's not only that they are good moments. They're moments that are so educational. So I see a lot more behind what is folks' forehead now, right? Every time we find that joy in that difficulty, we become better empathetic beings. We see more. We ask better questions. We listen better. Like you were asking, how are you feeling? Is your typical question. When people ask me that, I stop and I really try to answer. When I ask that question, I really try to listen. And so, if folks to read the book is to find that joy despite the difficulty, and see what can be taken home and can be used at home more often.
Mm. Well, that's it. And you know, it would not surprise you, Richard, that a lot of the times when I ask that question to folks, they start rattling off their loved one's chart. They start speaking in third person singular or first person plural. And I have to stop them and go back and say, "Now tell me how I asked about you." And that's when the stuttering and the stammering and the tears come, because they're not used to speaking in their own voice. But I have found such richness and beauty and joy and deep meaning in hearing people learn to speak in their own voice. And I had to learn this. I had to learn it painfully. And I mean, we lose our identity in someone else's journey. And I love the way you've written this, because you've written this like a trusted journalist. It's like you pulled out all the journalism school techniques and education and everything that you had. And you said, "I'm going to write a book and I'm going to tell a story." And you bring in all these different stories, and the one particular one down at the Parkland shooting and so forth with that young man, Peter, it was his name. And you really bring it to a powerful place, and you've done a great job. Where's the best way for John, by the way, John, jump in real quick, because we only got a couple minutes, and John said he wanted to say something real quick.
I talked over you, John. The flow was too good. I didn't want to interrupt. I just I really enjoyed the way you spoke about having the muscle tone for this, and the idea of muscle memory is just an amazing thing to me. But to apply it to like an ethical framework or an empathetic framework, like we have to have that muscle tone for empathy or for our own ethical choices, so that when the big thing comes up, we're in shape for it, you know. And that was just just good way of putting it. That was the first thing that popped into mind. But
the thing is, look at our healthcare workers and what they did. Why was I talking to them on TV and they were in their cars and they were scared and they were angry and frustrated and crying? And what did they do after they finished that interview? They went right back inside the hospital to help people. And I had to always ask myself, they're running into the fire every day. And it's because before COVID, they did that every day. So there was no doubt that they were going to come in to help me and other people, that if we were to get COVID, to do that. That's a really great example of muscle tone, because they're built to help people in our sickness.
Well, in our self-absorbed, the me-ism, as you refer to it in the book, culture that we have, empathy is not accidental. It's intentional. And it's something that it's going to be awkward at first, but it starts with listening. And that's why I love the whole point about the three lunches. Just if you will sit down and listen to people and spend time with them, and you'll find that, you know what, we really don't have that much different. There's not that many different things about us. And I've learned that about caregivers,
human, you know.
Yeah. And caregivers, caregivers, no respecter of race, religion, country, anything. You either are a caregiver or you're going to be a caregiver or you need a caregiver. And it is just one of those things that it unites us all in that journey of putting ourselves between a vulnerable loved one and even worse disaster. Richard, if people want to find out more about you, what's the best place to go to?
They can check out my Instagram or social platforms, and they can also check out the book at the places you indicated, and would love to hear from them. Yeah.
He's got a place to connect with them, and please do. RichardLouie.com, L-U-I, RichardLouie.com. And the book is called Enough About Me, The Unexpected Power of Selflessness. This is a powerful book. It will make a great gift after you've read it. Did you get it for somebody else? You know what? A teacher, a pastor, a counselor, somebody in your life that you know that is doing this, they will benefit greatly from this book. Richard's blessed me with it. I've really enjoyed it, Richard. So thank you, and thank you for being a part of the show.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, John.
Pleasure.
All right, we'll see you next week. This is Hope for the Caregiver, hopeforthecaregiver.com. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is John Butler, and I produce Hope for the Caregiver with Peter Rosenberger. Some of you know the remarkable story of Peter's wife, Gracie. And recently, Peter talked to Gracie about all the wonderful things that have emerged from her difficult journey. Take a listen.
Gracie, when you envisioned doing a prosthetic limb outreach, did you ever think that inmates would help you do that?
Not in a million years.
When you go to the facility run by CoreCivic and you see the faces of these inmates that are working on prosthetic limbs that you have helped collect from all over the country that you put out the plea for, and they're disassembling, you see all these legs, like what you have, your own prosthetic
and
legs.
And arms, too.
And arms.
Everything.
When you see all this, what does that do to you?
Makes me cry because I see the smiles on their faces. And I know what it is to be locked someplace where you can't get out without somebody else allowing you to get out. Of course, being in the hospital so much and so long. And so these men are so glad that they get to be doing, as one man said, something good finally with my hands.
Did you know before you became an amputee that parts of prosthetic limbs could be recycled?
No, I had no idea. You know, I thought of peg leg. I thought of wooden legs. I never thought of titanium and carbon legs and flex feet and sea legs and all that. I never thought about that.
As you watch these inmates participate in something like this, knowing that they're helping other people now walk, they're providing the means for these supplies to get over there, what does that do to you just on a heart level?
I wish I could explain to the world what I see in there. And I wish that I could be able to go and say, this guy right here, he needs to go to Africa with us. I never not feel that way. Every time, you know, you always make me have to leave. I don't want to leave them. I feel like I'm at home with them. And I feel like that we have a common bond that I would have never expected that only God could put together.
Now that you've had an experience with it, what do you think of the faith-based programs that CoreCivic offers?
I think they're just absolutely awesome. And I think every prison out there should have faith-based programs like this, because the return rate of the men that are involved in this particular faith-based program and the other ones like it, but I know about this one, is just an amazingly low rate compared to those who don't have them. And I think that says so much. That doesn't have anything to do with me. It just has something to do with God using somebody broken to help other broken people.
if people want to donate a used prosthetic limb, whether from a loved one who passed away or, you know, somebody who outgrew them, you've donated some of your own for them to do. How do they do that? Where do they find it?
Please go to standingwithhope.com/recycle. Standingwithhope.com/recycle.
Thanks, Gracie.